What is up, guys? Welcome back to the Zach and Pat Show. I'm Zach.
I'm Pat.
This is the show about manhood, fatherhood, entrepreneurship, and the mentality it takes to be successful at those things. And we'll probably sprinkle in some helpful real estate advice, too, because that's what Pat and I do. You know, guys, life can be tough. You can go through some things and struggle at times, but this is the show to let you know that you're not alone. So if you're someone out there going through any of these things, this is the show for you. All right, guys, let's talk about something we all need. High quality, comfortable, stylish clothing that actually holds up in real life. Whether you're grinding at work, hitting the gym, or just hanging out, the Normal brand has you covered. I've been rocking their gear, and let me tell you, it's not your average clothing line. They've nailed it perfect with the perfect blend of durability, comfort, style. Whether it's a go-to rugged Henley, a hoodie, a button-down that doesn't make you feel like a stiff, the Normal brand is where it's at. The best part is you can support the show while upgrading your wardrobe. Just hit the link in the description below. Check out their collection. Trust me, once you try it, you'll wonder why you didn't do it sooner. The Normal brand. Made for real life, built to last. Now go check them out.
Shout out to our friends over at Captain Beard Co. Guys, if you are looking for beard care products, shampoo, conditioner, body wash, give Captain Beard Co. a try. They have this unbelievable beard butter, balm, oils, and then it smells amazing. Ladies, if you're looking for something for your men as a gift, to help with their grooming, check them out. Also, if you guys are looking to just set the mood one night, candles, unbelievably smelling candles made with all natural ingredients here locally to St. Louis. Give them a shot. Also, while you're there, use the promo code Zach and Pat for 10% off your purchase.
Hey there, guys. I really appreciate you checking out the Zach and Pat Show. If you can obviously tell, we are a newer podcast, but one way we're really trying to grow the show is trying to get up the amount of subscribers we have. So, you know, if you're watching the show and you're getting something out of it, we'd really appreciate it if you could click that subscribe button. That would help us out a ton. Please click that button. And now back to the show. We have a very special guest in studio today, the owner and founder of Una Vida Tequila, the great and powerful Zach Conley. Welcome.
Glad to be here.
Welcome, sir. Thanks for getting on here with us. We're excited to have you and chat about your adventure through creating Una Vida and all those things. So why don't you go ahead and, for the people that don't know, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Yeah. So Zach Conley, owner, founder, One Life Spirits is our parent company. Una Vida Tequila is our flagship brand. Really, when you texted me earlier asking about fatherhood, manhood, all that stuff, I just saw entrepreneurship and I was like, well, that's about all I know. I don't have kids or anything like that. So, my business partner and I, Bryce, started it. We'll celebrate 7 years in business May of this year.
Dude. That's awesome. Congratulations. Awesome.
Yeah.
What made you want to get into like the liquor business?
So it's funny. I actually come from a family of alcoholics. So it was the last thing anyone thought of me too. I grew up in Wentzville, Missouri, right a suburb outside of St. Louis. We, just like everybody, I want to get out of St. Louis. I want to go to a bigger city. So graduated college, played football at Culver Stockton. Uh-huh. We moved to Denver, Colorado. My dad's side of the family was out there. Was going to work for the family company. It was industrial batteries. So basically generators, power plants, rectifiers, basically backup power for 911 services. So it was a cool thing. My grandpa had started the company, and I shit you not, 6 months in, I couldn't sell a battery to save my life. So I was like, oh man, this isn't for me. So ended up stumbling into a tequila bar in downtown Denver. Saw this older gentleman sampling tequila. I was fresh out of college, so I was just drinking rail awful things. And his tequila packaging was fantastic. Flash forward 6 months later, I was his first employee. So we were...
So you just met him there and you guys kind of hit it off?
And I was lost, kind of looking for what I wanted to do. Fell in love with the product. Thought it was an easy sell. Sales was kind of my background. And just started taking off for it, doing it all for free. And so finally I was like, hey, if I find you... So the way alcohol works, like I can't sell directly to a bar or restaurant. I have to sell to a distributor, and then that distributor sells to the bar or restaurant.
Why is that?
We're the only three-tier distribution alcohol country in the world still. So you've got these companies like Southern Glazers, Wine and Spirits, Breakthrough Beverage, all these big guys that basically just distribute your product. So
which like, I'm sure cuts into margins. And
well, that's why it's a bottle that costs $10 to make retails for $45 because everyone's got to make their 25%.
Yes.
So we, anyway, started working with him. I said, hey, if I find you a new distributor in a new state, would you hire me full time? He's like, yeah, do you know somebody? I said, of course. I didn't know anybody. I just picked up the phone and started calling distributors saying, hey, worst case scenario, I'm going to send you 3 free bottles of tequila. We got a Kansas City distributor that operated on both Kansas and Missouri side of the state. And then I became his first employee, worked for him for about 5 or 6 years.
Okay. And then?
And then George Clooney sold Casamigos for $1 billion. So right when I was trying to, again, I was a young man. I didn't know how to raise capital.
Yeah, so how old are you? This is like 34.
Okay. I'm 34. Okay. So I started working for him when I was 23.
Okay. So like, yeah, a couple of years out of college.
Yes. So I was trying to get family money, you know, some friends and family trying to just buy into this company. He didn't have any kids. I was like, dude, I believe in this. I want to be a part of it. And that was literally, I want to say that Diageo deal. It was first quarter 2017. He sold. And what's crazy is George Clooney started Casamigos in 2013, and then by 2017 had already sold it for $1 billion. Made more money than all of his movies combined and everything, and that's what made that celebrity tequila craze go nuts.
Yeah, because it really kind of popped off.
Yeah. If you can just turn something in 4 years into $1 billion acquisition, why wouldn't you?
I feel like I could name like 10 celebrities that I know that are affiliated with alcohol.
Oh, it's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. So then, so he's like, I can't give up any equity. We're, you know, this is tequila's on the boom. We're going to get bought. And I looked at him and was like, you're not George Clooney.
Yeah.
Right. Like, you don't have the name. You don't have anything like that. And my business partner, Bryce Lobb, at the time was working for a Bloody Mary mix company, the startup as well. So him and I would do events together, tasting, samplings. So I had quit. And he called and asked me, they were having some problems. And he's like, hey, are you guys hiring by chance? I actually just quit. It's like, oh shit, what are you going to do? I had no credit card debt at the time. I was like, I got a credit card. I think we're going to start a tequila brand.
There you go.
Huh.
Not the path I suggest for everybody, but I have a motto, just too stupid to quit. And that kind of was the start of that. And of course, thank God for him because he was all in. Like, he's like, okay, let's do it. I was like, all right.
Dude.
But what I tell people is like, I knew how to get my federal import license. I knew the bottle guy, the cork guy. I knew what distilleries we wanted to interview for our formulation of our brand, which has changed since. But
how did you find all that?
Working for him.
Oh, okay.
I made all my mistakes with someone else's money before I was ready to start my own.
Oh, okay.
So, I mean, I know you guys are in real estate. So imagine working for a brokerage, you learn everything, build your skills, your tool set, and you're like, okay, I can do this on my own.
Yeah, for sure.
Same thing.
Yeah.
So then quit August of 2017, and then we moved back. I moved to St. Louis. He's from Wichita. He moved to Wichita just because we were the only two employees. We're like, okay, we'll launch Missouri and Kansas at the same time, and then launched May of 2018. It was a quick one. I mean, it took us 6 months to get the brand off the ground and going.
Wow. Damn, that's so cool.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Congrats on that.
Yeah, that's amazing, man.
So, you know, you say you started a new movie from nothing, built it bottle by bottle.
Yep.
How has that philosophy shaped you and approach to life outside of business?
Oh, shit. That's a great question.
We like to go deep here.
Yeah. it's the same, you know, one step forward, right? As long as you're just one small victories, you know, everyone looks at, okay, how do you build a multi-million dollar brand, a multi-million dollar portfolio. It's those small victories each day. So it was, even when we started, we still do our own tastings, do stuff like that. But man, if I sell that bottle, that's one bottle towards that goal. And if you're just relentless in that pursuit and doing it every day over years and time, you're going to get it, right?
Right.
So that bottle by bottle is just, okay, right foot, left foot, bottle, bottle. Same type of, you know, metaphor.
Yeah. It's amazing, man.
It's awesome.
Well, you know, like, why, I guess this kind of answer, I can probably answer my own question here, but I was going to say why tequila, but I guess that was just kind of what you knew with the.
Yes.
Through the other guy. Like, so were you always a fan of tequila or is that
no,
like,
no, okay. No. Everyone's terrible tequila story was my vodka story.
Okay.
So
yeah, I got one of those.
Yes.
Still can't drink vitamin I would, water.
My answer to that question has kind of morphed, but at the time when we started, yeah, it was all I knew.
Okay.
But now, not to get into the weeds too much, but you have a Blanco, which is unaged, a Reposado that's aged for 60 days to a year, and an Añejo that's 1 year to 3 years. Tequila to me is the only category that can bring all drinkers of different spirits together. So a vodka drinker that hates whiskey will never drink whiskey. A whiskey drinker that hates vodka will never drink vodka. But I can get a vodka drinker to drink tequila, like a Blanco or a Repo. And I can get a whiskey drinker to also drink tequila because it's aged for 2 years in a whiskey barrel. So it brings all drinkers from different categories together, which I think is the great thing about tequila.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that is great, man.
Well that and you hear too, like, you know, a lot of these fitness people in the fitness industry,
yeah,
because of how clean it is, or just how
it metabolizes. Yeah. What is, yeah. I don't know.
What is it about tequila that fitness influencers or people that in the fitness are so drawn to?
It's the lowest calorically. It is zero carbohydrates. It is diabetic friendly because it's low on the glycemic index. So that's where you see people that do agave syrup versus honey.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the main thing is it's not grain based. So your whiskeys, your vodkas, most of them are going to be wheat, barley, rye, any of that stuff. Now you're distilling a lot of the gluten out of there, but the way your body metabolizes it, you're still getting mm-hmm. grain based, where tequila is actually a succulent. So it processes it more like sugar.
So it's more of a natural sugar. Like mean like the cactus?
So everyone thinks it's a cactus. It's actually in the lily family.
Okay.
The agave plant is.
Okay.
But no, that's where your body metabolizes it. So it's not as, people say they go crazy on tequila. It is a little bit of an upper just because your body metabolizes it like sugar. So it's a little bit more energetic and you don't feel so bogged down. I mean, we've all drank 30 beers and it's like, yeah, oh my God, it's like a bloated whale,
right,
where
yes.
You can rip 10 tequila shots and feel, oh, okay, I'm all right.
Yeah, I feel all right, yeah.
I didn't even think about that because I'm a big bourbon guy. I mean, as you can see, I've got bourbon all over the place here.
Get a good Añejo or extra Añejo. Okay. My favorite cocktail is an Añejo Old Fashioned.
Really?
Oh, yeah. I love an Old Fashioned.
Yeah, because I know bourbon's not the best for you in terms of, you know, calories and things like that, but
yeah.
Boy, do I love them. So I'm going to have to.
So
we need to get some Una Vida on the shelf.
Gotcha. Carful. One of my good buddies, he loved bourbon, but his wife, he would snore horribly. It was a gluten intolerance. Like the grain base would just make him snore. So he's like, I can't give up bourbon. Dude, try an Añejo. Like, what? Because he loves Old Fashioned. So like, try an Añejo Old Fashioned. And he just did that instead and quit snoring. And that's basically all he drinks now is Añejos and extra Añejos.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh. I'll have to look into that.
Yeah.
Wow.
Get a bottle of that, the Una Vida Añejo.
Yep.
Do you guys, what's the difference between Añejo and extra Añejo? Just age longer?
Age longer. Yeah. That's the only difference between the three.
Ages.
Blanco's unaged. Reposado categories, 60 days to a year.
Gotcha.
An oak barrel. And then once it's in that barrel a year and a day, it's an Añejo. And then 1 year up to 3 years. And then after three, it becomes an extra Añejo.
Gotcha. Yeah, because, I mean, like I said, I'm big on bourbon. I actually, my ex-wife for Christmas 1 year bought me a 5-gallon pot still so I could start brewing my own bourbon.
Oh, no shit.
Yeah. And making my own mash and all that stuff. The same Christmas, she also told me that she was pregnant, so it's still in the box. Hasn't been used.
But at least it's there.
Yeah, I've got it. It's
saving it for a rainy day.
Yeah, yeah. When kids get a little bit older and I got more time on my hands and I can actually dive into it a little bit more. But, you know, is the mash, is it even considered a mash when you guys are creating it, that you're running through the still and all of that? Nope. Or
so tequila is one ingredient. Okay. So it's made from the Blue Weber agave. Mm-hmm. So your tequila should be three ingredients, agave, yeast, and water. That's it. We're obviously in your bourbon world. You've got 51% corn, X percent rye, all that. Tequila's just Blue Weber agave. So there's 200 different species of agave, give or take, not the exact number. But tequila can only be made with one, and that is the Blue Weber specifically.
Oh, wow.
Okay. Huh. That's
crazy.
Well, yeah. And you know bourbon, obviously. A lot of people say, how come an Añejo is only 1 to 3 years? What a lot of people don't realize is that plants, that blue rubber agave still takes 7 to 9 years to fully mature to be able to harvest it.
Gotcha.
So where you can get your wheat, barley, rye, corn yearly. At least once a year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you have a longer time to age it. For tequila, even that bottle, it's already Blanco pretty much 7 to 9 years in the making.
Aged. Yes. Wow. Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
It's crazy. Huh. Shit.
Very cool.
Well, I feel like, tequila is one of those drinks that has a reputation, yeah. like we kind of talked about, either people love it or they wake up, regretting life. How do you change that perception with Innovita?
Education. Okay. Which a lot of people don't know. There's two types of tequila. There's what you call a mixto, M-I-X-T-O, which by Mexican law only has to be made with 51% agave, 49% sugar, water, caramel coloring, and additives. So if you see the word gold on a bottle, it's food coloring. So like I tell people.
And Jose Cuervo gold.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes.
Okay.
I mean. That's what you
don't mean to call them out. Yeah.
Right. Well, I mean, but that's what comes to mind. No,
they make, sure. They have other lines of 100%. Sure. So then the other category is 100% agave, which can only be made with 100% agave tequila. And they're very particular on it says it on the label. It has to say 100% agave. If it's not, it's a mixto. If it says gold, hey, turn and run. This is food coloring. So a lot of people, when they pick up our Reposado, they're like, oh, can I have your gold? I'm like, oh, this is a great point to educate you on the difference between gold and Reposado. The only way we get our color, flavor, and aroma is
the barrels.
Is the barrels,
yeah.
Naturally.
Well, that's the thing is most people don't realize. Bourbon starts out as vodka.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and then it's just aged vodka.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, one of the very first things that I did that I got was like a little Bubba keg, oak barrel, and experimented with it, and the directions were, buy the cheapest bottle of vodka you can find and throw it in there because the little ones will age about twice as fast as the big ones. So, you can age a bottle of vodka in there for, 6 months and you've got it in there for a year. If you age it for a year, you've got it for two. So, it ages a lot faster. And as you turn it, it can also help age and pull out those tannins. But yeah, it was crazy to sit there. So, I bought a bottle of Pop-Off, a half gallon of Pop-Off, poured it in this oak barrel and just let it age for, I think it was the first one I did was for 6 months. And when I came out, it wasn't dark like some of those that we have over there, but it was more along the lines of your Raspado.
Yeah.
Kind of a lighter gold color, but
did it make it taste
it
better?
Everything makes Pop-Off taste better. doesn't take much to make make that taste better, but but also experimented. I added tried some a coffee flavored one.
Ooh, okay.
So not knowing I added a vanilla bean and some coffee beans. Not knowing how much, I'm like, oh, 10 coffee beans, that's not going to be overkill. I should have only put one in there. Gosh. Yeah. It was like pure coffee coming out of there. It was nasty. I couldn't drink it. I mean, I ended up giving the bottle to my buddy because he's a big coffee bourbon drinker. So he just mixed it with more coffee and added some Kahlua and stuff to it to flavor it up. And he's like, oh, it's delicious. It's amazing. It fucks me up too. So I'm like, perfect.
Speaking of Pop-Off, I had a buddy in college. It wasn't Pop-Off. It was Aristocrat.
Oh,
basically same shit. And
I drank Congress.
Yeah,
yeah. Oh, these sophisticated. Yeah, he's names so sophisticated.
And we were in a fraternity, and in the fraternity house, he his thing was he would take a handle of Aristocrat and he'd pour it through a Brita filter 3 times.
Yeah,
and then he'd take the label off, and his last name was Hildebrand. So he called it Hildecrat. And it legitimately, he saved some of the, we did a before and after taste test, and it legitimately did taste better.
Taste better.
And, which is hilarious.
TikTok thing of using the frothers.
Oh, really?
So if you put it in just a cup of either whiskey or tequila and you do that, people are like, it tastes so much smoother. Why is it? It's aeration. You're adding oxygen to it, which is only going to smooth it out.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that was another thing I saw. People like, yeah, what is this magic trick? I'm like, just oxygenating the booze, practice that we do to help bring down the softness of it.
Yes. And so you guys are 100% agave.
Yes.
Okay. And now my question, I guess, is if it all comes from the same agave plant, why does it all taste so different? Like, you can get different tasting. Like, I know obviously the Blanco is going to taste different than the Raspado. The Raspado is going to taste different than the Añejo, but brand to brand.
Yes.
Why does that, why do that we get some that taste different.
If it's so the there's, brand. I guess we are going to get in the weeds. One of the biggest factors, once you have the agave, obviously making sure your agave is mature is a big one. You'll have guys that are cutting the plant short, not going to be as sweet of a plant, not mature, so it doesn't taste the same. They're just cutting corners. Yeah. Realistically, it's not all of it, but like, so then once you have the agave, you have to cook them. So they're, those piñas and pineapples are this big, 30, 40, 60, 70 pounds. The next thing you have to do is cook them to make them soft enough to extract the juices, mm-hmm. which you're going to ferment. There's three types of main cooking methods when it comes to tequila. There's a traditional brick oven, which is just an oven twice the size of this room that's been brick, and they steam it from underneath, and it's a long process. Next is what is it called, an autoclave, which is it's still steam, but it is a steel cylinder. Again, 30 yards long, and just stuffing it full of agave. And then next, what is called a diffuser, which is a conveyor belt system, very industrial. It's the most recent way, but it's the size of a football field, and they just spray the agave with chemicals to cook it. Mm. Best way I can describe it is, I say this all the time in education classes, is you can put a chicken breast in a crock pot, and you can microwave a chicken breast. The end result is a chicken breast, but your taste, the flavor, the juiciness is completely different. So like our process, which is that traditional brick oven, takes 72 hours. You've got to cook it for 48. You got to let it cool for another 24. Whereas the diffuser takes 6 hours of spraying it with chemicals. That's going to completely change how your tequila tastes for sure.
For sure.
Okay. So that's a big difference. Oh, for sure. The process of it.
Yeah, for sure. Just like anything, the longer it takes, probably the better it's going to be.
Yes, for sure. And then obviously what kind of yeast strain you're using, fermentation, distillation. But to me, the biggest one is that cooking process and which one you're using.
Yeah, it's almost like the traditional is just your all natural. You're not doing anything except adding hot water to it.
Yes.
And okay.
Cooking it.
Yeah.
Wow. That's cool. I had no idea.
Yeah, very cool.
I'll be honest. Before this, I didn't know that it was 100% agave. I didn't know agave was the only thing. If you would have asked me how you make tequila, I would have guessed it was like whiskey with a bunch of different shit.
Well, and that's where that horrible story that people have is, you know, when you're at a bar, rail, what you call that's in the well, the cheap stuff, right? Yeah. Like, give me the well. That well vodka or that well whiskey is still 100% vodka or whiskey. It's made cheaply, but it's still 100% of what that is, where well tequila isn't. When people are like, oh my God, I haven't had tequila since college, I'm like, tequila has come a long way, and you were just drinking shit.
Yeah.
And made your body, when you're trying to metabolize sugars, and then they cut it with grain alcohol and additives and sweetener, color, and glycerin, and food dyes and all kinds of shit.
Wow. Crazy, man.
It's really cool.
Oh, that's awesome.
Well, maybe when I get the still up and running, maybe I'll try some.
Well, you know, starting a liquor brand from scratch is no joke. Was there any like, oh shit, man, we might not make it moments?
Oh, for sure.
What's a crazy one?
So you guys know Andy Frisella and Chris Klein.
For sure.
So they're partners in our brand. How that kind of came about was we were still living in Denver. We had no, we weren't planning on moving back, right? We were living at, him and I were living in Denver. That was the market I knew.
I mean, let's be real. I don't think anybody ever plans on moving back to St. Louis, but it always
but it always,
always happens.
Pulls you back. I was with someone the other day. Pulls like, you man, back. It got me back. So I was a big fan of the MFCEO podcast. Bryce and I both too, were. So I had, I was just a fan of it, and I would drive from Denver to St. Louis, and I'd give an old HQ in
Green Park.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. I would drop off tequila of the brand I worked for. Finally, it was Aaron Summers that reached out. I was like, hey, you should do a tasting at Summer Smash. Like, oh, shit, okay. So I did a tasting of the brand I worked for, Summer Smash 2017.
I was there, yeah.
That was the first time I met Andy, and we just kind of talked. Again, I still had no intent of starting my own brand. Like, I was just kind of trying to figure out how I got into this brand on an ownership side. So then I would continue to drive back and forth like a psychopath, which he did a podcast on. He's like, I'm going to tell you guys this story, but do not try to do this. It doesn't work anymore. Like, I would just wait in the lobby. He'd come out because they only had those bathrooms. take a piss, and I'd be like, hey, I got some questions for you. And he'd just sit down and start answering questions. And then eventually we started a group chat. Again, I was a big enough fan of his podcast that I knew he didn't invest in anything. So I never, goal was never to ask him for anything, just other than knowledge.
Advice. Right. Yeah.
So in the meantime, I found out that Mexico doesn't take credit card for tequila. Uh-oh. I'm like, oh shit. So then we started having meetings with different investment groups and stuff like that in Denver, trying to get funds to get this thing off the ground. And then we were back in St. Louis having a meeting. Bandy, I hadn't met Chris yet. And he looks at us and he goes, how are you guys going to fund this fucking thing? We're like, oh, we've got a meeting with this investment group out in Denver that we've got a meeting tomorrow. He's like, I could tell he was agitated. I go, great. He goes, I want you to cancel that meeting and be back here tomorrow. Okay. Now, again, Bryce and I have no income. We're strapped just using credit cards to buy bottles, buy all the raw materials. All right, we'll do this. So then we came back and he's like, how come you guys didn't ask me for any money? I'm like, well, I listen to your show enough to know you don't invest in anything. He's like, all right, well, that's fair.
Yeah. I appreciate that. Yeah.
So he's just like, oh, okay. This makes sense.
You probably respected it because you actually were paying attention.
Right. You know? So then he brought in Chris and he's like, hey, we want to do this with you guys. So then that's where Andy and Chris got involved. And what is great about them is obviously you guys know them. They're both very well to do. But they are not blank checks, which I thank them every day for that, because they gave us enough for a single pallet of Blanco, a single pallet of Repo, and a single pallet of Añejo. There was no money for fucking salaries. There's no money for marketing. Mm-hmm. The question was, what is the bare minimum you need to start? Because you guys got to prove that this thing is going to work and you're willing to work for it. And right. I was like, okay. Yeah. So then we took all of our licks. We had to figure out how we're going to pay ourselves. We had to figure out accounting, you know, accounts receivables, PO, like everything. So, and then now obviously there's been some strategic investments as we've grown, but that was after we blood, sweat, and tears for 4 or 5 years to prove that we're doing this thing. So
this is like 2017.
Oh yeah. When people hear Andy and Chris are involved, they're like,
oh, you guys. Yeah. Sure.
How much money did you get? I was like, less than $45,000 to start.
Yeah.
Like, oh shit. It was like, there was no money for salad. None of that stuff. Yeah, we had to learn it all.
Enough for the tequila.
Yes. Which is like
enough for us to get started.
Right.
Yeah. Well, and to be honest with you, Bryce, and it was so funny because he would put this for this investment group. We were closer to get at least $1 million.
Oh, wow.
Oh, shit.
We had done this pro forma, all this research and this 40-deck slide of presentation that we were going to do, all of it. And I asked Andy, I was like, do you guys want to see this? He's like, no. It's like, we did all this research. He's like, I've been talking to you guys. I believe you. You're going to go out and sell it? Like, yeah. Like, okay, let's go. I don't need to see that shit. Like, oh my God, we just wasted
like 2 weeks of our lives, yes. Probably.
But obviously, we made the right move going with them for sure.
Well, but also think about how much you learned during that process of absolutely. Building that 40-deck slideshow, you know?
Oh, yeah. But not only that, but, and a lot of people would be like, you should have taken the more money. We wouldn't have learned what we did.
Right.
You would have just taken that money. Yeah. And you probably would have bought shit you didn't need to buy. Yes. You would have probably made a bunch of mistakes with it and be like,
I need more money.
$1 million, yeah. You know?
Like, and I'm not going to say any, I know just as we've grown, you hear some of these stories of these guys that are like, oh, we're putting together this group, this venture capital group, all these things and start out liquor brand that, you know, they get $1 million and the quote unquote CEO of it is taking $300,000 a year to start.
Yeah.
Bro, you're fucking high. What are you doing? That's not how that works. Right. You haven't even sold anything and you're taking
the money.
A third of the money. Well, that's what I'm used to making. Oh, geez.
Yeah.
Like, good luck.
Yeah. Good luck, dude.
Well, that too. And it probably, cause I mean, you get $1 million, you're going to go and overbuy on things instead of starting like you literally got a pallet of each.
You don't learn to budget.
No. Exactly. That's
you don't learn, okay, what are necessities? What do we absolutely
How
need?
Do we keep our cost as low as possible to make this little, I shouldn't say little bit, but this little seed investment last as long as we can.
Yeah. Well, and a lot of people don't realize this either, right? Like, oh, you sold it. You know, how much are you making? Nothing. Like I moved back in with my mom Bryce moved back in with his in-laws. Like, it was, okay, we got to start this. If you have an apple that costs you $5 and you sell it for $10, you obviously take the $5 and set it aside so you can always buy another apple. But the only way you grow your business is to take that profit and buy the two apples. So you have to reinvest your profit to grow your inventory, to grow the brand. And I explained like that to people, like, oh, you don't take anything? No. You got to grow the inventory to a point where you can afford to take a salary or be able to pay people and stuff like that.
Yeah. So how long, like, did it take you to get to a point where you could pay yourself?
Outside of just paying bills, probably 3 years.
Yeah. See, that's what people need to hear. Right. It's like, it's not a fucking overnight thing. Yeah. 3 years. You didn't
see, they may see all the stuff that you're posting now, but they're not seeing the shit that you.
Oh, no.
And like Andy talked about it, you know, he, perfect guy to be partnered with to learn that shit, because he did it with Supplement Superstore.
Yeah.
And then with First Form.
Yeah. You know, so. No.
That's amazing.
And then it was kind of that same thing where I think year five, and again, not a bunch, but year five, Bryce and I made more than we did the first 4 years combined. Again, not a whole lot, but to be able to say that, I was like, oh shit, okay, this is moving in the right direction. Yes. Right.
It's happening.
That's awesome. Know? Now, Una Vida, was that One Life?
Yep.
One Life. Where'd that come from? How'd you guys come up with that?
Taking out that first credit card and saying, let's roll.
Okay.
So the first name was
almost like YOLO.
Yeah, pretty much. Exactly.
Spanish for YOLO.
Exactly. Well, and the first name was Nueva Vida. And I realized, man, a bunch of white people that can't pronounce the name, they're not going to ask for it at the bar. You don't want to order something and be saying it wrong.
Right.
Yeah.
So we're like, okay, Nueva Vida means new life. Okay. Yeah. What's another way? Okay. Una Vida, One Life. Actually, Brian Teach came up with the name.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's cool. That's awesome.
Very cool. Oh. So entrepreneurs always talk about the grind.
Yeah.
What's something people don't talk about that can make or break a business?
Money.
Okay. Yeah.
And how you utilize it. And we're still learning lessons for sure. Just as sales increase. One of the first books that Andy and Chris gave me to read was called Profit First. You guys heard of it?
I've heard of it. I haven't read it.
Fantastic book. Any business owner, even for your personal finances, I would suggest reading it. It reminds me of, did your parents ever do the envelope system?
Uh-uh.
So essentially, okay, I get paid.
Different envelopes.
Yes. I get paid $1,000. I've got to put $100 in the electric bill. I've got $200 budgeted for groceries. So you're just divvying up your money to make sure you have everything covered. Same thing, only with checking accounts, right? Okay. We sold, we brought up a $100,000 truck. Okay. We always have to take aside the money that it costs to cost of goods, your COGS account. Like, we always have money set aside for more product. Okay. Well, now we want to be profit. Okay. Well, we're going to take $1 a bottle and put it in this little account. We're going to take 50 cents a bottle and put it into marketing. So then you're essentially building your budget for each category that you want. And if you do it like profit first, you're profitable from the get-go. It may be a little tiny, small amount, but you're profit. Setting it aside.
It's just profit. Like anything, like you pay yourself first.
Yes.
Yeah. So just like when you get a check, I mean, it's a little bit different than my end because, you know, being in sales and W-2 employee for the company I work for, I got a 401k set up. Yeah. So I'm paying myself first out of that. And then, but yeah, that's the same principle, but no, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, there's a massive loyalty in tequila culture. What's the secret to getting people to ditch their go-to brand and go to Una Vida?
I would say, I can say this now, there's a big movement in the tequila world of additive free. So yes, you have 100% agave in mixto, but even within that 100% agave world, there is, and we didn't know this when we started, and the additive-free movement wasn't a big thing, was you can still add 1% by volume of additives. So speaking of George Clooney, if you open up a bottle of Casamigos Reposado, it smells like burnt marshmallows, and it tastes like it. And you're like, oh, how is this so smooth and sweet? It's because, you know, they can pump it, not completely full, but 1% by volume of glycerin and vanilla extract to manipulate the flavor. A lot of people are now aware of this and you're trying to avoid it. For us, in the additive free world, some of those price points are not very approachable for people that are trying to do it, where they have Blanco starting in $60 and $70, where we're right around $35 to $40 that for us, I would say we are a very price approachable, additive free brand now. We just got certified at the beginning of this year, finally. But also,
congratulations.
Yeah.
Well, and another big thing is a lot of people aren't, there's 3,500 tequila brands, but there's only 230, last time I checked, licensed distilleries. You have these distilleries that pump out 150 brands. How do you taste different, right? That's another thing. How do you actually differentiate yourself in the market when you're all just made at the same big conglomerate? In the bourbon world, you know, MGP. Now, I will argue MGP still produces some of the best whiskey in the world, but some of these distilleries are just cutting corners and pumping out brands because America, we're 80, America's the 80% of the tequila market. So they're just trying to get brands up here, where for us, we are one of four exported brands out of our distillery and really the only one in the Midwest. So aside from being additive free, price point conscious for people, we want to, you know, we haven't raised, we started Casamigos, Patron, Don Julio, were all $5 to $8 more expensive than us. Now Casamigo on the shelf's $20 a bottle more expensive. So we've done very minimal price increases, but I would just say the quality of it for sure. And we're not made at a distiller. It's still family owned. Our master distiller, Sandra Gomez, is one of nine women master distillers.
Is it down in Mexico?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. And she just won distiller of the year last year. So we've got a lot of accolades and things going that I think can get people to switch for sure.
That's awesome.
So now I know you can't sell directly to places, but how, like, do you guys go into places and be like, hey, I want you guys to try this, so that then they push the people that are distributors to pick that
for
up?
For sure. So yeah, we still go into bars and restaurants, essentially sample them on it. They like it. I'll take some of this. Our distributor, you know, here's who it is. Do you know who your rep is? Absolutely. Just contact them to close the sale. Now, again, you guys understand this in real, there's so much, how much follow-up you've got to do, because the Joe rep that puts in the orders on vacation, or he forgets to do it, or the buyer forgets. So, I mean, we at least anticipate another three or four visits to make sure that bottle gets on the shelf, because it has to go through so many layers.
Sure. Yeah. Makes sense. Yeah. Cause I mean, I think that's the key to sales in general, is follow up, man. I mean, there's so many opportunities that I've gotten or haven't gotten because I did or did not follow up.
Oh, for sure.
You know, it's, I can think of a thousand, you know, like there's so many times where I, you know, where I followed up with someone that I haven't talked to and it ended up turning into a sale, or there's some that are like, shit, I forgot to follow up with this person. And then I see him on Facebook and they
went somewhere else.
Yeah. I went somewhere else. I'm like, shit, I missed that one. You know, like, God damn it. But you know, that's sales for you.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, there's no avoiding it. Well, you built this company from the ground up. What's the biggest lesson you've learned about yourself in this process?
Ooh. The ability I'm just too stupid to quit.
Okay.
Yeah. Like if anyone asks me what my skill set is just the ability to not stop. Now, I'll be honest with you, to a fault, where, you know, relationships have kind of suffered. But again, it's just an obsession of what I'm trying to build that I think you have to do what we want to do for sure.
Do you think that ties back to your athlete days and being a football player?
Yeah, for sure. Like, took a year off, tried out for a team, didn't make it, got in super good shape, then tried out for another, made it. So just the ability of not to quit, for sure. I think you have to have it. You have to be resilient. You have to be able
to have a special mentality.
Yeah, you got to be able to, rejection. God, hiring new people, and they're like, oh my God, they told me no. I'm like, Jesus Christ, that one no?
One no? Man, get over it.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, go get 100 no's and then come talk to me. Yeah. You know, like.
But, and that's what it takes.
Yeah.
Like, it's, you have to be able to put up with the rejection of being told no. It usually means no right now, right? Because somebody's, you know, and especially in the alcohol world, we joke, it's an industry of false promises, right? People say, I'm going to come in and do a promo, I'm going to do this. They've failed to do it. And then you have an opportunity. There's been customers where we would follow up once a year for 5 years. And then finally someone screwed up. They're like, okay, hey, since you guys always followed up with us, or you were top of mind when this brand screwed it, let's sit down and talk. Like, it's just that ability.
Is that because I know the Seiberg family pretty well. Is that how you guys got in with the Seibergs and all their restaurants?
Yeah.
Yeah. Just took advantage of an opportunity.
Like, Jim Schutte's a great friend. And that was one of the first people I sat down with. And he's just like, hey, we get promised all this stuff. rarely happens. He said, just do what the fuck you say you're going to do, and we'll work together great.
Yeah.
Okay. And that was
easy enough.
30 days in this, and I'm sitting there with one of the largest restaurateurs in St. Louis. Sure. He's telling me that. I'm like, oh, shit, okay.
Yeah.
We do it.
Yeah, that had to be a big account.
Oh, for sure. For sure, yeah.
Yeah, they're awesome. They got great stuff. So
it's not to like about Cybergs.
Yeah.
Cybergs, Twisted Tree,
Tavern, you know, all the things.
One of my favorite spots.
Well, your brand is all about community. How do you scale something while keeping it personal?
Being active is ownership.
Okay.
I mean, we do everything. I still do liquor store tastings, still do bar promos, still run all, I mean, now they'll probably get to a point where some of that stops, but I think you can still be heavily involved and be active. And I think that shows a lot to people, customers, the community itself, being involved in those events and not just hiring it out. You see, I mean, people all the time, just hire it out. I'm like, well, you're not building these relationships with these people. You're not being active in your community yourself, which I think goes a long way.
Right. Well, and they're not going to care as much as you care.
Correct.
That's what I found in my business. You know, I've tried to bring people in, and it's just like the issue is nobody's going to care as much as I do.
No.
And, you know, and then I ultimately, it just hasn't worked out for me yet. But
been the biggest learning lesson as a company is hiring people.
Yeah.
Right.
It's so hard.
It is. And no one's going to work harder than Bryce and myself.
Right. Especially being athletes. That's the biggest thing that I've learned. It's tough to find somebody that's not or hasn't been an athlete that, like, has a hard time succeeding with like some sort of sales role.
Yeah.
Like I always tell the story, my buddy, we talked about saying no, but he had this mindset from early on, and he would just go up to every single girl in the bar, every single one of them, and ask, and they'd all say no, no, no. I'm like, dude, what are you doing? He goes, well, eventually one's going to say yes.
Great mentality. Yeah.
And now he's a very successful salesperson in Arizona.
Yeah.
It worked out for him.
It did.
No, so how many employees do you guys have?
I think we're six.
Okay. Yeah. So it's still a small shop.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. Yeah.
That's
for sure.
That's cool, though. I mean, it's still tight knit. I mean, the fact that you're one of the owners, like, going out and doing tastings and stuff like that.
I'm reading, I'm going to blank on the name, 21 Irrefutable Lessons in Leadership. But you can't ask people to do something you're not willing to do yourself. To build a company culture and at least to get people on the same page that realize, oh shit, the owner's still doing tastings at a liquor store.
Right.
Some of them are great. Some of them suck and no one's coming in.
I don't want to go there. Yeah.
Right. I tell them all the time, Friday night, 6 to 7 or 6 to 8. Sometimes I don't want to be there.
Yeah, for sure. Like, you'd rather be out with your friends or doing whatever, you know?
Absolutely.
Like, yeah. Man. Well, you know, every industry has some shady shit. What's the biggest behind the scenes thing in the spirits business that would shock people?
Probably that additives.
Additives.
Yes. Yeah. So a lot of people, even in that 100% agave world, the fact that people have
that leeway for 1%.
Yes. Yeah. They're pumping it full of glycerin and stuff, which is crazy because there's an app called Tequila Matchmaker. The guy Grover started it. Semi fan of him, but he pissed off Big Tequila so much that they raided his house and he had to flee the country.
Oh, shit.
Oh, yeah. So that's how much. We're also doing business in Mexico. So as corrupt as America is in Mexico, it's just out in the open a lot more.
Yeah.
So Big Tequila got mad and said they sent in some people that said he had a still in his house. And then the CRT, which is the Tequila Regulatory Commission, which is the agency that oversees, they kicked in his door and he had to arrested him and everything. And he had to flee the country.
Wow.
Wow.
Damn.
It's crazy. Crazy. So, all right. So 7 years in, you mentioned, you know, you just have that drive, that mentality, but is there anything else that kind of fuels that hunger and passion that keeps you going from when you first started?
I would say, growing up with alcoholism in my family, it's kind of a proving point of, you know, something that crippled the men in my family for generations. I want to build an empire off of. So kind of stopping that norm in my family, not only stopping it, but completely pivoting and doing something great with what has kind of affected my family in a negative way is an internal motivator for me for sure.
Now, do you guys do any sort of like charitable work in terms of like AA or alcohol, like helping people through things like that?
That's actually a great idea, but no, we don't. It's not a bad idea.
Yeah, because I know you see like Anheuser-Busch promoting like safe driving and things like that and stuff like that. I was just curious if that was something that you guys...
No, that's a good idea.
Yeah.
Thanks.
You got something out of this today. No, man.
Especially since that's kind of, it sounds like that's a passion of yours to kind of to break that chain.
It is, for sure.
Yeah, that's got to be a kind of a weird, you know, like, does your family have anything to say about, you know, the business that you're in or anything?
They don't really ask. Okay. Just because like, and it's weird because like, my both my brothers got married. They were dry weddings. All the holidays, no one drinks. I'm like, man, I could do all this cool stuff for you guys. Like, it wouldn't cost you anything. We can get some bartenders, do some awesome drinks. But
it is what it is.
Yeah,
you know?
Makes sense for sure.
Yeah, well, tequila is kind of blowing up in the U.S. Why do you think? I guess you know we've kind of answered this. Just a lot of the health benefits and stuff. But why do you think it's the the go to drink for a lot of people? Kind of growing right now.
I'm going to say this because I think I get back to it is the America's 80% of the tequila market, Germany's second, and Mexico's third.
Really?
Yes.
Germany's second. Huh?
Yes. So in Mexico is the number one Buchanan Scotch market in the world. So I think it's a lot of that import of want what you can't have when you can drive down the street and get somebody making tequila on the side of the road. A lot of Mexicans don't really drink that much tequila. They're very big Scotch drinkers. It's what the wealthy people drink. It's, a status thing where they're drinking Johnny Walker Black. Like all of our partners, they drink Johnny Walker Black all day long. And I think that's kind of what, I mean, the number one beer in America, either last year or the year before, was Modelo.
Mm-hmm.
Really?
Yeah.
Not Bud Light anymore?
No.
Well, I guess I should have known that. Yeah.
they're coming back now. Yeah. But no, that year when all that went down, Modelo became the number one selling beer in America.
So I
think it's that import thing. You know, it's a little exotic. You can't, have what you can't. And
I feel like I've seen a lot of Modelo sponsorships like popping up in the UFC. I mean, there's so many. I mean, I want to say like I've seen it in other sports as well. Like, I feel like that's a brand that's really blown up.
Yes.
Wow.
But that on top of the health benefits, the least amount of hangover that you get is definitely from tequila.
To me,
yes, for
like,
sure.
Bro, like, something's happened to me over the last like 5 years. It's just, I get so hungover every time I drink.
If you just drink tequila, well, and again, people are like, well, I drank a bunch of margaritas. Well, again, it's all the sugar and the, right? Yeah. If you're just doing ranch water, which is tequila and club, or just tequila and water throughout the night, you can drink enough to where you're going to still feel like shit, but if you do it not too bad, like you won't feel as bad as...
Drink responsibly.
Yes. 35 Bud Lights. Yeah, you're going to feel like dog shit the next day.
My stomach, bro. Like, oh, I love... Like, beer is what I've always drank, man.
Yeah.
And like, to be honest, like, I haven't had a beer in like probably 6 months. Like,
yeah.
It's just like every time I have more than like one or two, it just... My stomach the next
day. And I love the hoppier beers, the stouts.
Yeah,
like,
I do too.
God.
Yeah, man, the IPAs,
flavorful beers,
all that stuff.
I'm a big Irish red guy.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, Irish reds. But like you said, beer, it just fills me up. That's and
fills me
I'll
up
just
stomach.
Right. Yeah. But that's why I like, that's why I like bourbon, and probably why I like the Añejo is because you can't drink it fast.
Right.
Like you sip on it.
Right.
So I can have two or three in a night spread out over, 4 hours. And I'm going to be fine.
Yeah.
Your body's metabolizing it, and it's going to be fine. And I'm not going to feel like dog shit the next day.
Yes.
But even still with some of these bourbons, depending on if it's a rye versus or wheated or anything like that, even though I'll have like two or three, I'll still wake up with a headache. Just I think there's some sort of food allergy in there somewhere.
I was going to say, have you noticed? Is there
definitely
a specific-
rye? Rye.
Really?
Get me. Yeah. I can't.
Okay.
If I have two ryes in a night, I know I'm going to wake up and I'm going to have a headache.
No,
so I kind of shy away from them. So,
and I'm sure you like the taste of them, though.
They're so good. like, you know what?
It's worth it.
Yeah,
I'll sacrifice.
I'll suffer.
I chug a couple Pedialytes before bed.
Yeah.
And wake up. I'll be good. Maybe take some allergy pills.
Yeah,
yeah, we'll be fine. We'll work around it. But no, I'm excited to kind of dive into that the Añejo market and try that stuff. So. What are some of the future goals that you have for Una Vida? What is it, what does success look like for you with Una Vida?
For sure. We're in 9 states now. No plans for new states this year. It's growing those markets that we're currently in. For us, a big
what
focus,
states are those?
We're in Tennessee, Illinois, Missouri, Kansas, Oklahoma, Texas, Iowa, Nebraska, Arkansas.
Midwest.
Okay. Yeah, Midwest for sure. Where a lot of the brands start on the coast and work their way in. We're going to go start in the center and work our way out.
Okay.
It's building a team. Like that's, you know, that bottle by bottle mentality is great. It works. But the only way it's scalable is we need more people.
More people. Yeah. You're only one guy.
Yeah.
You can only do so many tastings, so many, you know, meetings, so many things.
Yes.
It's just.
And so that's a big, you know, objective for Bryce and I, is to learn how to build and lead a team. You know, first round of employees, you know, when we lost, I'm like, oh my God, what do we do? You know, talking with Andy and Chris, of course, you know, like, did you really think your first employees would stay with you forever? Like, well, that was the hope.
Yeah.
Like, that's not how this works. Yeah. Like, ah, shit. Okay.
Now, are the, cause I mean, anybody that knows from St. Louis knows the community and everything that's built at First Form and the way that they interact and all that, and the way they do a good job with their employees. Is that something that they've worked with you guys on and talked about you about building that culture within your company?
A little bit. Yeah. I mean, it's, you can honestly just watch it. And if you're around it, whether it's on social media or whatnot, you can see what they're doing. They're running it like a sports team.
Right.
Each person has their role. Yep. They have the objective. They have a mission. Team building, you know, whether that's working out or they go out as well. Like it's very much sports specific, which again, you know, we can find athletes and stuff like that. It's a leg up on what that team atmosphere is, what that locker. I mean, yeah. have you guys have been in their headquarters?
Yeah, yeah. Of course.
I mean, that locker room.
Oh, it's literally like a professional sports team.
If not better.
If not better. Yeah. Yeah.
I heard they kind of set it all up to resemble like what they have going on down at Alabama, like their facilities.
Shit. Okay.
Yeah. I thought that was something that I had heard.
Yeah.
But,
it's,
yeah, I know.
So cool.
That's what it is. But I think that's why they have that company culture, and the production that they do is each person knows their role, knows the assignment. Just like if you're running a football team or a baseball team, okay, right guard does this, left tackle does this, running back does this, quarterback this, right receiver that. And if everybody knows their objective, then the play works. Well, it's that one screw up that, right. Okay, the play doesn't fucking work.
Right. Well, it's funny that you mentioned, because Murph just posted about it last night and brought back about a basketball tournament that they had a few years ago, and how Sal was saying he's, you know, it started because Sal was making fun of his son about shooting like his dad. And then Murph kind of tied it in, was like, just remember him talking about how when they had this basketball tournament, Sal was like, well, I can't shoot, but I know how to play defense. I know how to get back. I know how to pass the ball to the people that can shoot. And it just kind of goes to show, like, that's the mentality that they set up. And like, exactly what you're talking about. Like, he doesn't have to do all the things. He just needs to do the things that he's strong at.
Yes.
And give it to other people that are good and let them do what they're good at. It's just a great culture over there.
Yes.
And great leadership. Again,
but if you also ask Sal 10 years ago, he was wearing all, he did all of it. Because you have to a point, right? Like, yes. There's a small business owner. You have to be able to do everything until you find the right people. Hey, you're an accountant. Hey, you're sales. Hey, you're warehouse. Like, finding those people in those roles for sure, it is a hard thing to do.
Yeah, and then again, to find people that are going to care to the level that you need them to be successful. Yeah, it's a long road to build that team, but I mean, once you do it, I mean, that's how you scale it.
For sure.
It's really the only way to do it.
Yep.
Well, speaking of community and all that, liquor branding isn't just about the product. It's about that feeling you give to people. What is it that you guys are doing to give people that feeling about drinking Uta Vida?
That's a great question, because we joke all the time. There's been so many success stories of, you know, you've got branding, imagery, juice, right? There's been brands that their packaging is beautiful, their marketing is great, and their juice tastes like shit, but they'll sell a million cases. Then you've got the brands that the packaging is not very good, the marketing is not good, but it may be the best tasting bourbon, but no one will know what it is.
Yeah,
so,
yeah, like I was, you know, I look at this over here, and I know, I mean, I'm very novice when it comes to bourbon, but I know Pappy Van Winkle's a nice one. And if I'm looking at all of the bottles over there, that's like probably the most least attractive bottle over there, you know, but I know that that's one of the best, if I'm not mistaken, right? You know, it just kind of goes into what you're saying.
And that's where
I need to cut you off.
No. But that's exactly right, especially in that bourbon world. Like, it's I love when they play with like Hidden Barn bourbon, like the stuff they're like, oh shit, no one knows what this is. It must be good.
Yeah.
But you know, especially in the tequila, like Patron, they've come a long way. But I mean, their juice isn't the best, but they're the number one selling tequila in the world.
That bottle looks cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They got a bunch of rappers talking about it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So like, it's that weird consumable market where still branding and imagery matters so much because you can't just solely focus on the juice, like, or the quality of the product. But for us, man, it, you know, that one life mentality is we want to be the centerpiece of all those special moments that you have. So whether it's a wedding, whether it's a graduation, whether it's a sales goal, whether it's a anniversary or engagement, like we want to be that bottle that's there at the center of those moments. So it's something you remember when you drink it.
That's awesome.
Great.
Now, like I know with like certain bourbons, they come out with like special anniversary stuff and rare stuff that obviously they're pricing higher. Is that, I mean, because I know how you talked about aging certain things. Is that something that could be done with a
tequila? Yeah. So this 2024 was the first year we did our anniversary blend.
Okay.
Which was, and we'll do one each year moving forward, but it was our Reposado. Then we finished it in 90 days with a French sherry cask.
Okay.
So yeah, no, we do stuff like that for sure.
Very cool. Very cool. And obviously, like for the people that don't know, depending on the every oak barrel is going to bring out a different taste in it.
Oh, for sure. So that was another thing. Yeah. Like, yes. So to be a Reposado, 60 days minimum, year maximum, but a 60-day Reposado and a 9-month Reposado are going to taste completely different.
Sure.
Even in the same barrel. Now, when you start doing a different barrel, so you got white American oak, you got Hungarian oak, you got rum cask, you got, that's a big thing that'll make brands taste different. Not just time, but which barrels they're using.
Well, there was a cool, I think it was Buffalo Trace that did it. I can't remember, but they had this Oak Tree Project bourbon line that they came out with.
Okay.
I think it was like 100 different oak trees. And they bottled the exact same mash and everything in each different one, and each one produced however many bottles that it produced, and they sold it. Well, I had a buddy that had two different trees, and it was amazing how same everything. It was amazing how different the two trees taste, like
you
got from those barrels because of the trees. And, you know, I guess it goes to show, like, hey, the environment that those come from, what they're like, what they're absorbing in from those environments. But yeah, I mean, and then especially if you're aging it in something that's already been used, now you're pulling like a sherry, you're pulling from that, pulling flavors from that as well. Like, yeah, I mean, there's so much cool shit, like the chemistry and science behind all that stuff. That's so, insane. It's just so cool.
Yeah.
That's something that like a consumer would never think about, like, you know, getting like different you expect like, okay, I'm buying this bottle, it's going to taste the same every single time. But like with that, you know, you get different things. And I used to kind of experience the same thing in the restaurant industry. Like I worked in barbecue for a long time.
Fucking consistency is hard.
It is. Well, cause it's like you.
Different cows.
Different cows. You know, like different, you know, like this brisket tastes different than like I used to cut up, you know, fucking 20 briskets a day, you know, and I used to cut into them and each one looks different, feels different on the knife, cuts different. The amount of,
which I assume in turn means it tastes different.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely.
Right.
And then you get people that would come in and they're like, you know, this brisket tastes different than the last time I was here. And I'm like, yeah, we're cooking it the same. Like it's the same recipe, but like
that cow,
that's a different cow, you know, it's a different brisket, you know? So it's like everyone's different. And I guess it's kind of, I never would think about it being the same in like the terms of like liquor. But when you explain it like that, I mean,
that's where blending comes in.
Okay.
Where a lot of like, if you take, the same barrel, but again, like when you're in a rickhouse, right? The barrel, it may be the same mash bill in the same barrel, but if it's on the basement floor versus the top floor of the warehouse, it's going to taste completely different.
Really?
Well, it's like Jefferson Ocean. So Jefferson Reserve makes all these different bourbons, and they have one that they just age it out in the ocean.
Yeah.
And it absorbs the salt from the ocean. And now you have a more salty tasting bourbon.
Huh. It's crazy.
And just something as simple as two stories will make a difference because of the temperature, right? So in the barrel aging, like the heat and the cold are contrasting and whatever the
expanding
opposite.
And
yes. Which is just sloshing the liquid around, which will depend on how much is actually picking up from the barrel.
Wow. Yeah. It's crazy.
Yeah, and the science of it is so cool. I'm a science nerd. I like that shit.
Our master distiller, for our other brands out in Union, Missouri, Demetrius Kane's one of the smartest dudes I know. Like he's, I think, a trained botanist or his wife, chemical bio. Like it's insane.
That's cool.
Damn. So you guys have whiskey and vodka brand as well, right?
Yes. So after Una Vida, our second brand was El Trago, which is our agave spirit, which is made in Mexico, but it's actually bottled up here now. And being completely honest, we're like, okay, we have all these great products. If anything ever happens at the border, we're out of business. Mm-hmm. So that's where we partnered with Demetrius out at Nobleton's. Laban Orange Whiskey was our first kind of collaborative product with him. And then High Post American Vodka, which we just launched last year, and the flavors we did last year as well. Cool. We're just growing that portfolio. Another part of this industry a lot of people don't realize is like 80% of that back bar is going to be owned by five companies. So you got a company like Diageo that owns Casamigos, Don Julio, Guinness, Johnny Walker, and you got like a Beam Suntory that owns Hornitos Tequila, Absolute Vodka, Knob Creek, Jim Beam, Basil Hayden. So a lot of these big conglomerate companies own a lot of these brands.
Okay. So you guys are kind of building that.
Yes.
Okay.
Wow. Where instead of where they try to come in and, you know, buy the brands, we're going to try to just build them ourselves.
Yeah. Now, are you going to try and just stay agave based that you're talking about, or are you talking about maybe possibly shifting into a bourbon? Or
so what's great is the Laban Orange Whiskey is a sweet corn whiskey.
Oh, okay.
The vodka's sweet corn as well.
Okay.
And what's great about Demetrius, our master distillers, he is also our farmer. So okay. We control it from grain to glass on our American portfolio of products.
Cool. Yeah. Wow, that's cool. You see farm to plate or whatever that restaurant.
Grain to glass. Yeah. I like that.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
So, are there a lot of companies that have that kind of control? Or,
no.
I was going to say.
We lucked out for sure.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, dude, that's great. That's so cool. So what's been different about launching a vodka and whiskey brand versus launching a tequila brand?
Really not that much.
Really?
I mean, I will say on the back end of it, there's a lot of different formulation approvals, TTB label approvals. But as far as a selling and brand building aspect, not much, right? Because we establish those relationships with them. As long as the product tastes good, as long as the branding looks good, and they know we're going to support it like we do Una Vida.
Yeah.
Like High Post, our vodkas was our fastest growing brand.
Makes sense.
Because we had all those relationships built already. It's
like the guys from Una Vida made a vodka.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, shit. Let's go.
Yeah. Let's try it.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. That makes complete sense.
Yeah.
I will say if we start dabbling in bourbon, that'll be a whole nother word because some of those bourbon snobs are like, they want this, this.
Hey, you got one right here.
Yeah.
I like my bourbon, but I'm not going to be one of those that's like, oh, it didn't come from Kentucky. It's not a bourbon. It's not a true bourbon.
Right.
That's
a thing.
Yeah,
okay. It doesn't.
That's a lot of you'll hear a lot of like real bourbon snobs like say that shit.
Oh, so it's got to come from Kentucky.
It doesn't. So that's what a lot of people think, right? Like tequila is what you call an origin of denomination spirit, which means it has to be produced in a certain geographic region to get the name tequila, right? Tequila has to be produced in Jalisco, Mexico. People think bourbon has to be made in Kentucky, but really it can be made anywhere in the United States.
Okay.
But people only think because Kentucky produces some of the best bourbon in the world that it has to come.
Is that the last state you guys are going to try and go to? Try and flip all those bourbon drinkers to tequila drinkers?
They're doing it themselves.
Are they?
I think bourbon made a mistake with all this allocation and not being able to get stuff to where they're like, I'm tired of my favorite stuff I can't get. Yeah. So they're starting to come over to the tequila world.
Well, you're starting to see a lot of that stuff stop. Because of how bad it did get. Because, obviously COVID, you know, you're stuck at home with a lot of things. Luckily, we were in industries that were deemed necessary that we were still working.
Yeah.
But, you know, we still had a lot of downtime. And, you know, that's when I really kind of dove into the bourbon stuff, just like everyone else.
Yeah.
You know, and there's things that you weren't able to find. And you know, I mean, shoot, like Buffalo Trace. That's a $25 bottle, $30 tops for a bottle of bourbon. And it was hard to find. I know people that were trading it for like high end stuff when they had it. So like I found it. There's a place down in Barnhart, real close to my office, It sells it at a gas station.
Yeah.
I'm like, fuck, I'll just go in and buy it all up. And I'm trading people in California for shit, like getting E.H. Taylor for Buffalo Trace, like stuff like that. And
well, in the secondary market, yeah, it was three times what its normal price was.
Well, shit. Look, I mean, the Pappy story.
Yeah. I watched the documentary on that. Yeah.
Everybody, like the Pappy story. If you haven't watched the documentary, it's pretty interesting. But I mean, they release their allocation every, I think it's September or October when they release it, but they also send out like what retail price is for it.
Yeah.
Like even their highest end, which I think is their 23 year, they say maybe at retail $300. Well, that thing's selling for like $6,000-$7,000 a bottle in secondary. Crazy. And just the markups on it's insane just because they're, again, the allocation, they're only producing.
You can't get it.
You can't get it. Yeah. But you're starting to see like one of them, like Heaven Hill Bottle and Bond. That was one of those that was allocated for a long time. I can go to Costco or Deerberg's any day of the week and get it now.
Same way you can get Buffalo Trace pretty easily now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. But, and you know, Weller's still one of those tough ones. You know, like Ohio's a great place if you've got connections to Ohio, because you have to buy hard alcohol from a state store.
Yeah.
So they can't mark it up. Now, when they get their allocation, I mean, these people are waiting outside. Yeah, they know when it's coming and it's gone like that. So like I played for a team in Dayton, Ohio, and my host family that I live with there, like I always tell them, I'm like, hey, if you ever run across any of these bottles, let me know. I'll buy as many as you can for me. And so, but yeah, I mean, it's still crazy for some stuff. Like Weller's tough to get, you know, obviously Pappy. You know, there's a handful of other ones that are tough. Eagle Rare. Like, I love Eagle Rare. It's and that's like when I first started drinking it, it was like a $35-$40 bottle of wine or bottle of bourbon. And now it's like $75.
Mm-hmm. I saw it at the store the other day, actually.
Yeah. So, you know, it's yeah.
And people get tired, again, consumables, products. If they can't get it, they've got to find something else.
Right, they move on to something else because they're going to find a different bourbon or whatever.
And the fact that they know this is three times
the price
of what it should be. Oh, Jesus, what am I doing?
Yeah, what am I doing here?
Look at Bland's.
Yeah.
It's one of the most overrated bourbons I think I've ever had in my entire life.
Which is crazy that we're saying that.
Yeah, right. It's a good $50 bourbon.
Yes.
At $50 to $60, it is amazing. But when you're having to spend $250 for that little fucking round ball with a horse on top.
Just to give you an idea how crazy
Blanton's
was.
Back to the look of it. The look of their bottles and the horse on top and spelling out Blanton's, that's fucking cool.
Yeah.
But I'm not spending more than $50 or $60 for a bottle.
Right. Yeah. So I was at a liquor store tasting. I want to say it was 21 or 22 when Blanton's was just kind of at its peak. This lady came in. So it was a liquor store that also had a bar. So you could essentially try stuff and then go get a bottle. She came running in. It's my husband's birthday. Blanton's is his favorite. Do you guys have any? And he's like, no, we don't have any, you know, allocation. And she looks at that sampling bar and there's like less than half of a bottle of Blanton's. She's like, I will pay full price for that half bottle if I can buy it right now. They sold it to her, but I mean, people were going that crazy. Yeah. So she gifted her husband a half bottle of Blanton's, but you couldn't get it.
Yeah.
Sorry, honey, this was all I could get. All right. I drank half of it. Yeah.
It was so stressful. I had to try.
But Blanton's was probably even more than Buffalo Trace. That was where I was like, holy shit, this is the branding that they built.
Oh, yeah.
That was kind of died off because I think people realized what it was, but I'm not even sure. Was it the collectible? What made it go bonkers?
I mean, I think they won some awards,
yeah.
Which obviously anytime you win an award, that's going to increase the want for it. But then again, the bottle, just that egg-shaped bottle or oval or circle bottle, and then the whole horse thing that goes with it on top.
And they have the horse and then there's a letter on it. So then the goal is if you get the thing, you buy enough bottles where you each horse you can spell
Blanton's
and you get this big cool thing.
Okay. Yeah. That's
isn't it funny?
Yeah.
Even as kids, right? Yeah. The cereal box, you're collecting all the little tabs to get this. Even as adults, it's the same The booze companies are doing it to us.
Literally, my son last night, we did the same thing. Like he's real into the Paw Patrol and all that shit right now. And, you know, we incentivized him because he's been kind of a nightmare at swimming lately. So we're like, you know, my wife bought him like a new little character. And I was like, hey, buddy, I got a surprise in the truck. If you're good, you know, if you listen to me and you listen to your teacher and we do everything, you're right. I got a surprise for you when you get back in the truck. And, you know, of course, he's very motivated by that. But the second he gets that one, he's like, I need this, 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 and this. And it's like, I need that. I need her next. I need this one next. And I'm like, it's like, oh man, I was the same way when I was a kid. Yeah. But, you know, it's just like, it's the same thing. It doesn't
How old are you guys?
36.
Right. I'll be 32 next week.
Okay. Pokemon.
Yeah.
Pokemon.
Jesus Christ. Yeah. We're going crazy.
And that's
that
coming back. McDonald's is giving out Pokemon cards with their Happy Meals.
Sports cards. It's been crazy to see that industry.
I've got some buddies that do that. Yeah, my two assistants are in it, and they make they make a killing on that stuff.
Really?
Oh yeah.
I got a buddy.
I'm like, how do you guys keep pulling these rare cards? And he's like, we just get lucky. Wow. But they're selling shit. They're getting cards that they're constantly turning over. They'll buy a box for $100, and they'll pull two or three cards from it that they'll make $1,000 on this one box just because of a couple cards.
Wow. Yeah.
It's insane.
Well, yeah, I got a buddy of mine, and I was talking to him about this the other day, and I want to get him on here just to talk about it because he's like a huge collector. Well, he collects. He's like a big sneakerhead guy. So he always, whenever the Jordans drop, he always he'll buy a bunch of pairs, and then he ends up selling a lot of them. But he's also really big in collecting specifically Jordan cards. And he's he was showing me all. I mean, he was telling me he's got probably millions of dollars worth of cards. Like it's
this is a retirement plan,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, oh, exactly. And I'm like, dude, this sports is trip. Like I had no idea that there was that kind of money and that kind of stuff. Yeah. Like I'm pretty ignorant to it, I guess. But I was just like, holy shit. I mean, he's been doing this since he was a kid.
And it makes me want to go back through because I still have a box of all my old cards and stuff that I had. I'm like, man, I want to go back and check through these.
I'll do it.
I'll take a look for you. Yeah, no.
Remember Beanie Babies? Yes, those things went nuts too for a while. Like some of those rare ones, like the Princess Di ones and things like that were selling for
thousands
of dollars. Yeah.
People love collectibles. It's crazy. People just love an opportunity to you tell me that there's something that I can, I got to get them all,
it's a piece of paper with a picture on it or it's a stuffed animal full of beans.
All right. So how do we do this with Univita?
If
I could get Univita to be the Beanie Baby craze, I'd be fucking rolling.
Oh man. Or what were those pens? The Uniball pens. Do you remember those things?
I remember those.
Collect those. You had to have every fucking color.
Yeah, I mean, we just love to collect shit. Oh, yeah. It's like, it's something in our human nature, I think.
Yeah.
Man. Well, Zach, if we gave you unlimited resources, money, distribution, whatever, what's the ultimate version of Univita Tequila?
On every back bar, every liquor store shelf, and every home bar, for sure.
Love it.
Pretty easy.
Yeah. Fair enough. Love it.
And then if you could go back to day one, knowing what you know now, what's the one piece of advice you'd give yourself?
Start studying leadership now.
Okay.
Because
kind of something you're diving into now.
Yeah. Just because obviously you think, oh, it's just going to be us two. Well, if your goals are big enough, you got to build a team. So studying that stuff, leadership, team building, start studying that day one for sure. Because it may take 4, 5, 6 years to get to the point, but at least you have all those lessons learned.
Yeah. No, that makes sense. It's a great piece right there. Yeah. Sure.
Definitely a good piece of advice. Because at some point, everybody's going to be a leader.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Whether it's business, family, something, relationships. Yeah.
Agree. Well, man, this has been amazing having you in here. Yeah, absolutely. Anything else you wanted to talk about or say while you're here?
If you're in Wichita, go to March Madness this weekend.
Okay.
Not sure when this comes out, but
it'll be out next weekend.
Next Tuesday.
Well, let's hope Mizzou's still in it.
Yeah. Let's hope. Fingers crossed. Yeah, man.
Well, we always like to end it with one last question, hit you with a surprise. We call it the Tombstone Game.
Okay. Oh, shit.
Here lies Zach. What's it say on your tombstone?
Too stupid to quit.
Perfect. I love
it. Perfect. That's awesome.
All right, guys. Well, thank you so much for tuning into the show. If you haven't clicked that subscribe button for us yet, please do so. That would help us out a ton. Click that like button as well. Comment what you thought below, and we will see you next time.